What is going on, everybody, and welcome back to the Tuesday edition of the Stochastic NHL Strategy Show. I'm your host, Josh Harris. We are sponsored by Prize Picks. We have a nice offer for you with them a little bit later. Make sure on your way in you smash that like button, hit that subscribe button. Joining me as always, Slim Cliffy. How was your weekend?
Weekend wasn't too bad. Got to get outside now that the weather's starting to get better. It's happy spring, everybody. It's now officially spring. I was starting to turn that corner. So, I mean, it's just good to get outside more. You know what I mean? Like, middle of January, you go for a walk and it's minus 20 Celsius. Like, it's not really that great. At least, you know, around freezing with some sunshine. I'll take it. I didn't play much last night. I just played like a few low dollars and a bunch of like tickets and stuff like that. I looked at the slate last night. People were kind of excited about it. I was not excited to play last night. I just saw a bunch of incredibly lopsided matchups with a bunch of high end offensive teams on a small slate. I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to sit this one out. But the bright side to that is that for today's 13 game slate, there's no Colorado. There's no Edmonton. There's no Pittsburgh. I mean, I'm tired of playing the Pittsburgh Penguins, so thankful for that. So, you know, there are a lot of top end, despite there being 26 teams on the slate, there are a lot of top end guys missing. Yeah, there's some big totals, like there's a four, I think, and there's a couple 3.9s, but, you know, there's a lot of totals here where both sides are sitting at three or betters, and those are the kinds of slates that I like, even if there are 13 games. I like the slates where there are at least some close matchups and not every game is, you know, Chicago against Colorado or something.
Yeah. I didn't like the slate last night from a one lineup perspective. Like, it was just miserable trying to get down to one lineup. I wanted to play 150, but DraftKings seemingly has eliminated the $5 150 max. I guess they're getting ready for baseball season.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that was brought up in our Discord as well was that at least FanDuel has a somewhat similar contest that is somewhat similar, buy-in structure. So there is an alternative if you want to go play on FanDuel, but I mean, this sucks from DK. I was just looking at the $4.20 max today, which is what they're juicing instead of that $5. And I think there's like 1,700 extra entries in the $4 today compared to Saturday. And at that point, I'm thinking, why not just make the $5 150 max? But I'm not DraftKings, so we can only play what they give us, and we'll do with the best with what we got.
Yeah. Good luck winning tens of dollars tonight. No, but like the 333 is still 20K. The first had a nice finish there over the weekend. Finished second for $5,000, which...
Yeah, why didn't you bring that up first? Don't ask me how my weekend was. I didn't win thousands of dollars. How'd you do?
Listen, that money... Here's the thing. I have a second kid on the way. This is my wife's first child. Her only craving, pregnancy craving, is buying expensive shit. All that money is going towards the nursery. I was going to put it on credit cards, but holy crap. Luckily, I won that. Burden off that. She's like, ooh, we need this monitor. $500 baby monitor. Fucking tells her the 40 time for the baby. Like, I don't care about the 40 time for my infant. Anyway. Yeah, no.
Congratulations. I mean, you know, both on the baby and on the win. But hopefully you get to keep at least a few dollars and maybe go buy yourself a bang or something.
I don't know. But, you know, my three biggest wins this season have been Ottawa Senator stack. So I don't know what that says about me. But they've been kind to me this season. We have a 13-game slate today, though. Thank you, Jerem, for pulling for me. I didn't even think I was going to get up that high, but I forgot what it was. Oh, I thought Nick Schmaltz scored a late goal, but he whiffed on it, and Juuso Valimaki scored. That's what because I was watching UFC all day, and I had no idea Nick Schmaltz was back. So ignorance was bliss there. Didn't have him in my lineup. Got lucky there. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. Big Turk says, get your wife's boyfriend to buy some of the nursery stuff. Hey, buddy, I'm already on that. He's already got the Harry Potter theme stuff coming in, much to Avery's chagrin. Not a big Harry Potter fan, but we'll work on that. 13 game slate. Make sure to smash that like button before we get into it. Don't forget to sign up for the Stochastic Hall of Fame by changing your avatar on DraftKings and FanDuel. Download the avatar from stochastic.com/avatar. Then you got to place contest over 5,000 contestants, which is impossible in NHL. Thanks, DraftKings. And then you can tweet the win to @HOF on Twitter or email us with your screenshot. You win a free month Stochastic Plus Platinum, $120 value there. You can win, you can win once a year, but you know, if you're winning more than one at a time, you're doing pretty well anyway. So here we go. Let's get into the slate here. Let's talk about my Ottawa Senators here. The Ottawa Senators, the 2.5 total heading into Boston. The Bruins have a 4 total. Dylan Ferguson went last night, who was a very good, like, it was a very nice story hearing like how he got to the NHL. He was like on the couch a few months ago, and he had almost, I think he had like 47 saves last night, got the win. Mad Sogar probably going tonight. Linus Ullmark is confirmed. This is back-to-back now on the road for the Senators. This is a miserable matchup. I'll save some time here. I'm probably out on the Senators in 1-3. If they happen to sneak into one of my lineups in 150 max, so be it. I'm more on the Boston side here. Now on DraftKings, the top line is coming in with less ownership than the second line, which is Pastrnak, Bertuzzi, and Zacha. Like, ownership agnostic, I get why people are going to Boston too here, but you take ownership into account on a 4 total, I'm going to go to that top line.
Yeah, I'll just touch real quick on Ottawa. I don't have interest either. The top line is over 20K, and they're outside the top 15 lines tonight on our top stacks tool by top 2 probability. So, you know, there are just other lines that are expensive that I'll go play at low ownership. I don't need them at 0.1%. If I can get a 3% line, that's fine. So, yeah, not single entry, not on a 13-game slate. If this was last night, I think it would be a different story, but it's not, and it's tonight. And what to do with Boston is the real question here. You know, the minutes have been okay, I guess, like 16-ish, 16-plus, Marchand around 18 for the top line. They've been really, really good this month. 4 expected goals generated in the month of March per 60 minutes, 5-on-5, 6 actual goals. Now, they're shooting nearly 14%, but even if you cut that down by a third, they're still scoring a ton just because they're generating so many shots. They'll be going out against the Ottawa top line, and that Ottawa top line, as good as they are offensively, is a line that trades chances. And a line that trades chances against the Boston Bruins with Matt Sogard in net probably doesn't mean good things for the Ottawa Senators. So I do have a lot of interest in the Boston top line here. You're right. They are coming in with less ownership. I think it's fine. Again, it's one of those things, like if you want to take out the Brusque, put in Pastrnak for a power play stack, which I think makes sense because Ottawa is one of the most penalized teams in the league. I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't wonder if Boston comes in a little bit higher than 9%. Just because they aren't that expensive. It is a great matchup, and they do have the highest total on the board. So, you know, even if they come in at like 12 or 13%, I think that's just fine considering the matchup here. So I do like Boston 1 a lot. I'm wondering about Boston 3 here because the Ottawa bottom 6 is really not that great. And you know, probably going to be a lot of ownership on Boston's top 6. I could see this being one of those games where Boston gets out to like a 3-0 lead by the middle of the second period. And then you start seeing Trent Frederick and Charlie Coyle come over the boards every third shift or something like that, right?
Trent Frederick's been shooting the puck a bunch too.
Right. So I don't mind like a 2-man from the third line or something like that, especially in this matchup with such a high total where they could get more ice time than they otherwise normally would. But I really do like Boston 1 here.
Yeah, I do as well. Boston 2 is fine. Like I said, like anytime you can get Pastrnak in a stack, that's fine. Like that's, it's always the conundrum when you're stacking Boston 1. What do you do with Pastrnak, right? So like people just go to Boston 2 here just because as you get down the Senators depth, it gets worse. But like, I'm just going to go to Boston 1 if they're going to come with less ownership, just the way it is. I see Germ says, I saw you in the NASCAR 44 contest. My man, let me tell you something about NASCAR. The first ever projection model I ever made was for NASCAR. My biggest cash ever, I think, was NASCAR. So I don't really watch NASCAR too much anymore, but you know, I always like to play cars turning left, so it's fun.
I mean, if you can win money while you're doing it, why not, right?
Yeah. But that was a long time ago. I haven't had a good catch since. Anyway, Nashville Predators with a 3 total. Now I'm just getting fat shamed by my doctor. Going into Buffalo, the Sabres have a 3.5 total. UC Saros confirmed Craig Anderson is probable. Jordan Greenway was up on the top line on Saturday. Don Granato doing the thing. He got hurt. I think Tuck Thompson and Skinner are back together here. Roman Josi is out for the Predators. Now, like, I don't see too much ownership on the Sabres top line. They haven't been great recently. That's why they broke up that line. Now, they probably, like, they're probably out of the playoff race now. Like, they would have to go on an unbelievable tear down the season, which is possible. But this is a good matchup. Predators are missing so many people. The only saving grace, honestly, is Saros. This lineup is garbage. They're blue line. They play everyone almost the same amount of minutes. But no one's really good defensively on the blue line. So, like, I know Buffalo 1 is 22,000 DraftKings, but their ownership's around 5%. I have a lot of interest in Buffalo 1 here tonight.
Yeah, Buffalo's pretty much cooked for the playoffs. I think if they win out, they get to, like, 96 points, and that's right around the cutoff for the wild card. Like, they're not winning out. So, yeah, they are cooked. This Nashville team, like, this was a non-playoff team at the outset of the season, and there's no Forsberg, there's no Johansson, there's no Granlin, there's no Josi, there's no Niederreiter. Like, they lost four guys out of their top six, and their number one defenseman. And this was a non-playoff team to start with. And I know Buffalo's top line hadn't been good, but their struggles were mainly defensively. And I think that's why you saw them broken up. It's because they couldn't stop anybody. I don't think that's a concern with Nashville, right? Like, if you're going up against Matt Duchene and Philip Tomasino, you know, they're going to get some chances, but I don't think you should have a lot of trouble controlling the play, especially without Roman Josi in the lineup. Since the All-Star break, which is about a month and a half ago now, that top line's at 4.1 expected goals per 60 minutes, 5-on-5, 4.6 actual goals, shooting under 12%. So, like, a little bit high by shooting percentage, but certainly nothing extreme. And something that we pointed out in our Discord today is the way that the Buffalo Sabres have been allocating their ice time. I don't really want to play anybody but the top line. Honestly, go look at Buffalo's ice times from the last, like, 7 games. Their top line guys are, like, 18 to 20 minutes. And then literally everybody else is between 13 and 15 minutes, all their, like, amongst their forwards. Everybody, literally everybody from the, like, number 13 forward that only dresses sometimes to Dylan Cousins. They're all within 90 seconds of each other. Like, if Buffalo's going to spread out the ice time that much around his depth, like, I guess it brings some extra value to, like, the fourth line. Not playing a fourth line from the Buffalo Sabres on a 13-game slate. No. So it's to the top line or nothing for me. And the top line has been generating a lot. The Nashville top line, I mean, we don't even know what the top line is because they mixed up their lines last game. And they didn't have lines in morning skate today. So we don't know what the Nashville lines are going to be. But their old lines, neither of them were, like, close to league average by expected goals against. Nashville's penalty kill is typically very good, but a lot of that is, like you mentioned, with UC Saros. If Saros isn't Vezina caliber tonight, Buffalo can absolutely fill the net. Buffalo 1's one of my favorite lines on the slate tonight, and I know they're expensive, and if you don't want to play them because they are that expensive, I get it, but I also think they're worth it.
Yeah, I feel like they are going to be around the ownership we haven't projected, just because they've burned so many people the past week. They were chalk against Washington, but people forget that, like, Nick Dowd goes out against top comp at home in Washington, and, like, pretty good defensive center there, and Buffalo struggled a little bit. This isn't that matchup. Like, there's nothing defensively that worries me from Nashville. It's just Saros and Ned. It's whether he can stop all 53 shots or he lets in 6. You know what I mean? Like, and on top of that, like you mentioned, the power play spot, Nashville's still one of the worst penalty kills, based off shots against per 60. Like, they give up a ton of shots. So,
and Yeah, and the final thing, like I was just looking through the projections, the Buffalo top line, their projection is right around 42 DraftKings points for tonight. That leads the slate. There's only one other team even over 40 points for the top line, and that's, we'll get to them later, it's Dallas. You know, Buffalo, that Buffalo top line is going to be like 5, 6, 7%. I think they should be given a serious consideration.
I agree. Tampa Bay Lightning with a 3.9 total heading into Montreal. The Canadiens have a 2.6 total. Andre Vasilevsky is probable. Samuel Dikembe Mutombo is confirmed. Kirby Doc is back on the top line with Nick Suzuki and Raphael Harvey-Pinard. But imagine he also slots back in on the power play. Not really sure. Like, that's going to shore up the top line defensively a little bit. I can't imagine Kirby Doc is worse than Jesse Ylönen defensively. No, but like Doc and Suzuki have had pretty good defensive numbers, Montreal defensive numbers this season. Again, like, not too much ownership on Tampa Bay here. We've seen this game, I think it was in Tampa a couple days ago. Like, Tampa just ran them over. I don't see why it would be any different this time. It's just in Montreal. Like, yeah, Doc Suzuki going out against Kucherov and Point. Like, maybe that can hem him in for one last goal. I don't know. Like, I like this as a power play spot. They are really expensive. Like, if you power play stack, go Point, Kucherov, Stamkos. Like, at that point, I think I'd rather just play Buffalo at home. But, like, there's merit to going to Tampa Bay here for sure.
Oh yeah. As far as the Montreal side goes, I honestly think it would be their second line that I have more interest in, from an offensive perspective, which feels kind of weird to say because usually I want the line with Nick Suzuki on it. Not really the case tonight. Like Drouin and Denis Gurianov, they haven't played a lot together since Gurianov got there. I think about four games worth of ice time. They're out playing the opposition 55% of the shot attempt share, 65 shot attempts generated per 60 minutes. That's pretty good offensively. They are not really getting any ownership, 1.5%. Josh Anderson, I think, other than Cole Caulfield, has probably been Montreal's best offensive player this season. Like, his expected goals for play driving numbers are absolutely absurd. Like, I don't mean like just for Montreal. I mean, like, across the league amongst the best. And if you look at the lines that he jumps on, he makes them all better offensively. I don't know if he makes them better defensively. In fact, he probably doesn't. We don't care about that too much in DFS, though. He makes them better offensively. And with Gurianov and Drouin actually playing well in a small sample together, Anderson and Drouin over a much larger sample playing pretty well offensively together. Like, Anderson and Drouin, last 95 minutes together, over 3 expected goals for and actual goals for per 60 minutes of 5-on-5. That's pretty good. Not just Montreal good, like good in general. I don't mind that second line as a filler here tonight. I don't think you have to full stack them. You know, Gurianov, Drouin, Gurianov, Anderson, you know, something like that. I think that makes sense from the Montreal side. On the Tampa side, I mean, it's really hard to say what to do, right? Because we don't know what their lineup is going to be. They started their last game one way, finished it another, and had an optional skate this morning. And we have to remember in the last game, like, there's a lot of different line combinations, different types of lines that Tampa Bay used. You know, they had that that Kucherov Point Hegel line together for a while, and then Stamkos, Point, Kucherov played the entire third period together. And I think even at one point, Alex Killorn was taken off the power play for Anthony Cirelli. So there could be some pretty significant changes to this lineup, and we just don't know them. That's kind of what sucks about Tampa, or what to do with Tampa right now. What I will say is that whatever the top line is for Tampa, whether it's Point, Kucherov, and Stamkos, or Point, Kucherov, and Hagel, or whatever, Point, Kucherov, player X. That's the line that I have interest in. You know, Doc coming back should help the top line defensively, but it's also his first game in over a month. It's a pretty brutal matchup. Harvey Pinard and Suzuki have pretty bad defensive numbers with Josh Anderson elsewhere, which is kind of surprising, but hockey's a weird game. So, like, Kirby Dach's going to have to do a tremendous amount of heavy lifting to make them anywhere close to respectable defensively. I think it's a pretty good matchup for whatever the Tampa Bay top line is going to be. Just don't know what it is yet. I'll say I like the Tampa top line, whatever iteration they show in warmups, and I don't mind pieces of that Montreal second line.
Yep. 3.9 total, pretty low ownership. Definitely got to consider it there. Before we move on, we got a $150 super chat from Grade A Flicks. Thank you very much. You're crazy. You're crazy, man. I like you, but you're crazy. Instead of a private Twitter message, this is the proper way to say thank you. A 3 weeks ago, Slim, Josh, and Jake took their time to help me get ready for the 333 monster on FanDuel. Had three satellites, cash 700, hot on Prize Picks. Thanks, Arden from Yonkers. Thank you very much for the super chat. Congrats to you. That's what we do. We like helping. If we can help, it's good. We talk a lot about players. Some people pick up on different information than others. Seems you did well. Sometimes I wish I took the right bits of information from myself. But, you know, this is about you. Congrats to you. Thank you very much for the super chat. You're crazy.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Arden from Yonkers. We certainly appreciate the generous super chat. Congrats. You know, it seems like you send us a screenshot like every 10 days of a four-figure Prize Picks hit. Just doing really, really good work. It's on you. We just try to guide you. Like Josh always says, you're the one putting the players into the lineup or clicking those Prize Picks buttons. So congrats on your work, and thank you very much again for the super chat. Let's try to finish this season strong.
Arden from Yonkers, you're on the car phone. Every time you say that, it just reminds me of Sports Talk Radio from New York City. Let's move on to the Carolina Hurricanes, 3 total. Heading into Madison Square Garden, the Rangers also have a 3 total. Pyotr Kochetkov is probable. Igor Shesterkin is confirmed. Igor Shesterkin, very cheap at home tonight, but we'll get to goalies at the end here. Carolina just completely blew up their lines. They're searching right now. They're hurting really bad after Svechnikov went down for the season. On the Rangers side, there's literally no ownership on any of the Rangers lines here. I can't imagine these new Hurricanes lines being like super good. I just like what they're doing is a little confusing. And then you have Zibanejad, Panera, and Tarasenko with bad expected goals numbers. But like they're like a line that's always going to have bad expected goals numbers. So I don't mind taking a stab there. I don't know. Like on a 13-game slate, it's just kind of hard to prioritize the Rangers in the spot.
Yeah, I'm not playing Rangers.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. I rarely play teams against the Carolina Hurricanes because Carolina is just flat out one of the best defensive teams in the league. I mean, just in the month of March, lowest shot attempts against in the NHL, second lowest expected goals against, penalty kill always strong. It's just a brutal match. Like there are games where Carolina will let in like 6 goals. It's an 82 game season. Weird things will happen over a 6-month stretch. When there are 13 games on the slate, I don't think you have to force in the New York Rangers playing the Carolina Hurricanes. So I'm with you. I will say, I think this is getting close to the best lineup that the Rangers can put out. And like, they'll probably, you know, this is a game they can go out and win 4-1, but are there going to be 3 goals on the top line? Like that's the kind of problem, right? So I'm out on the Rangers. Carolina won is what's interesting me the most in this game, because with or without Svechnikov, it doesn't really matter for Aho and Jarvis. That's something you and I have talked about on this show over the last couple weeks with regards to Carolina, is that Jarvis and Aho, going back to last year, whether it's Svechnikov, I think they spent some time with Andre Kasha last year, whether it's Teravainen, whether it's Natchez, it doesn't matter. Whoever is on the other wing, they're scoring goals. Carolina's top line this year without Svechnikov, 3.5 expected goals generated, 4 actual goals generated, shooting only 9%. League average is about 8.5%. What that tells us is that they're generating an absurd amount of shots when that Carolina top line is on the ice. So I think Aho, Natchez, and Jarvis makes a nice filler here tonight. I think there are reasons to leave off Jarvis, particularly power play reasons. So you can just go Aho, Natchez, two man if you want. I think my favorite line in this game is the Carolina top line.
Yeah, I don't think I'm truly prioritizing anything from this game, but I do
agree. I want to say that. Like, in my single lineup tonight, I don't think I'm going to have a single player out of this game. If you ask me what my favorite line is in this game, I think it's Carolina 1.
Yeah. I just, quick note for the haters. In my 333 lineup, Igor Shesterkin shut out. Everyone is rapping in the Discord on Igor. He's not the same goalie he was last year.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess we'll find out come playoffs, I guess.
Good luck with Bedard next year. Let's move on to the Minnesota Wild, 2.6 total. Heading into New Jersey, Los Diablos have a 3.3 total. Philippe Gustafsson is confirmed. Vitek Vanacek is probable. Man, that chart you showed in the Discord, Matt Zuccarello, like the top line offense without Kaprizov, it's not surprising because Kaprizov is easily their best offensive player. It's still just wild to see how bad that top line is offensively without Kaprizov. This is a tough matchup for the Wild anyway. The total reflects that. Like, the Devils have started to put it back together. They put Timo with Bratt, and he's sure that line had a very big game the other day. That being said, this is another one of those games where I don't have a ton of interest in 1-3. I will say line matching is important in this one. I kind of want to take the New Jersey line going at whoever is going out against Hartman, Zuccarello, Steele. Now, the problem is he sure usually takes shutdown roles, but are they going to – do they think the Hartman line is the line to shut down, or is it Joel Eriksson Ek? You know what I mean?
That's kind of the problem, is we don't know. We don't know what line they're going to consider the top line as a shutdown matchup, and that's something that happens a lot more than people might think. It's like Seattle. Sometimes you'll see the McCann line as the top line. Sometimes you'll see Wennberg and Schwartz. It is a little bit of a problem. I will say that both the Minnesota top line doesn't have very good defensive numbers, but they're also changing up that Minnesota top line. They're saying Marcus Foligno is probably going to be back in the lineup tonight, and he's going to the top line with Hartman and Zuccarello, which is probably going to make them even worse offensively, which I don't know if it's possible, but Foligno's going to do his best to make them worse offensively. But he will make them better defensively. That's the one thing that he can do, is make them a lot better defensively. So I don't know if either of the top two lines for Minnesota present a good matchup for New Jersey. So, like, I'm not – the 5-on-5 matching isn't something that I'm particularly concerned about in this specific matchup. What I am concerned about is kind of twofold. One is Minnesota doesn't take a ton of penalties. They're right around league average, maybe a little bit above. And two, New Jersey's power play hasn't scored since Timo Meier got there, or the top power play unit hasn't, at least. It's the second new power play unit that has been scoring all their power play goals. Literally, since Meier got there, the top unit has not scored a power play goal. Now, they're still generating roughly the same amount of shot attempts from pre-Meier to now with Meier. But they're not scoring, and you're introducing, a significant piece late in the season. Maybe it could just take them some time to get their angles and their passing lanes and just get a little bit of chemistry together. So I don't have a ton of interest in either side, really. If I were to play anything, I think I would just go to the New Jersey top line. I would just go to Meier, Hischier, and Bratt. You're getting all three on the power play. Minnesota doesn't take a lot of penalties, but the penalty kill itself has been on a slide over the last 6 weeks. So maybe New Jersey can take advantage of it and kind of break out of their funk here. The top line, you know, Meyer and Bratt haven't played a lot together, but they're generating a ton when they're on the ice. Over 50 minutes together, they're over 80 shot attempts per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. It's a low grade power play when they're on the ice. It's just a brutal matchup. Minnesota's genuinely one of the best defensive teams in the league. And they're not playing Kalen Addison. You know what I mean? I guess they're replacing him with John Klingberg. So that's, you know, half a one, you know,
Klingberg might be better with Minnesota than he was at Anaheim because Minnesota's more of a cycling team.
Yeah, but I, long story short, if I were to play anything in this game, I think it would be New Jersey one, but I'm going to be pretty honest. I don't have a lot of interest in this game, period.
Yeah, me either. At the beginning of the day, I thought the Devils were playing the Capitals, and I wanted to – and then – the completely different matchup. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of this game, 1-3. As we mentioned off the hop, we are sponsored by Prize Picks. You could get one free month of Stochastic Plus Platinum, which is $120 value, by the way, and up to $100 deposit match bonus when you sign up and make a deposit with Prize Picks. It's a prop-based contest. If you're in a state that doesn't have legal sports betting, I think you should be on Prize Picks. You can go up to a 5-player lineup that can net 10x your entry fees. I think sometimes you can do a 6-pack of picks. You can also go cross sports, so it doesn't just have to be hockey. You can mix and match. I was up on the Prize Pick stuff here. Cliffy will have a pick, I'm sure, if maybe. But I saw David Pastrnak for a goal. It's always 4 total. David Pastrnak over half a goal. We also have the daily shot prop tool, which is part of the you'll get it if you get the 1 free month Stochastic Plus Platinum, and it gives you the best shot props based on expected value. So you got anything you like on Prize Picks or not really?
Yeah, there's one that stood out, and it was Aaron Ekblad taking the under on his shots on Prize Picks. Now theirs is at 3, so you can get a push there. The Aaron Ekblad projections at 2.51 shots. So I don't mind taking the under there. Maybe you can even squeak a push out of it, especially where he's off the top power play unit now.
Yeah, a lot of people scared to bet unders, I think. Betting unders, if you bet unders, just don't watch the game. You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, it's very profitable betting unders. So let's move on to the next one. Florida Panthers with a 3.6 total heading into Philadelphia. The Flyers have a 2.9 total. Alex Leon is probable. Oh, boy. Carter Hart is confirmed. Here's the thing. Like, Panthers played last night. The Flyers have a decent home total. It's just like, what the? Where? Like, who? Who do you play here? Like, Alex Leon sucks, but, like, the Flyers lines are even more suck. I don't know. Like, I kind of like going back to Florida too. They are really expensive though.
I don't mind that Philadelphia second line, which, like, picking a line with Wade Allison on it feels like picking a line with Noah Cates on it, but they're on different of the top 6 Flyers lines. So you got to pick one or the other. It doesn't really matter. But the reason is because that Hayes Lawton Allison line has actually been good offensively this year. In a fairly significant sample, they're up over 160 minutes together, which is about 15 games worth of ice time, give or take. 3.1 expected goals for, 3.3 actual goals for per 60 minutes. So not only are they generating, they're actually scoring. Now, Wade Allison's probably not going to get a lot of ice time, even though he's, quote, in the top 6. He's probably still only going to play like 11 or 12 minutes. So I think he's a guy you can leave off if you want. But Hayes and Lawton are probably going to both be around the 17 to 18 minute mark. You know, the team is falling apart, but Hayes still has 13 shots in his last 5 games. So he's staying involved offensively. You know, none of them are on the top power play unit. I don't even know how much value a Philadelphia power play unit has at this point. You know what I mean? I don't mean to say that flippantly, but they change up the power play unit so much that, you know, am I mad that Kevin Hayes isn't on a power play, you know, with Tyson Forster and Noah Cates? I don't care. You know what I mean? So, you know, you'd like them to have a good power play because Florida, you know, doesn't really have a good penalty kill and they take a lot of penalties. You don't always get what you want from a John Tortorella coach team. That's something we've learned over the years. I do like that Philly second line. Like I said, I think you can leave Allison off, but it's one of those kind of fillery type duos going against a Florida team that can give up a lot of shots, that is going with Leon in net. You know, none of them on the quote top power play unit, but like I said, I don't care. I really don't. Not for this team. So I like Philly too on the Philly side. Florida side, I think it's just back to Florida too, like you said, right?
Bennett's in. I mean, it could be Luostarinen there anyway, which would make it cheaper.
You know, even the top line for Florida has been generating quite a bit, that Barkov E2 line. You know, Barkov E2 at nearly 3 expected goals generated per 60 minutes. It's pretty good for a Barkov line this season. He hasn't been his typical self. So I don't mind them, but I think I'd rather just go back to Florida too. They're still generating a ton of offense. They're still over 4 expected goals generated over the last month. You know, we saw last night that this team doesn't need 3 power play goals to really get there, right? The Philadelphia penalty kill is the one thing that has typically kept us away from stacking against the Flyers, but it has fallen off a cliff over the last month. Like I was looking basically like since the All-Star break, I think they're giving up the most goals against per minute on the penalty kill or second most. It's been bad. So I like Florida too, where you get 2 guys on the top power play unit playing extremely well. The Philly second line, for as much offense as they are generating, they're giving up a lot in exchange as well. I think it's both second lines I like here.
Yep. Columbus Blue Jackets with a 2.6 total. Heading into Washington, the Capitals have a 3.9 total. Daniil Tarasov and Charlie Lindgren are confirmed. The Patrick Laine experiment has begun. This is his second game at center, centering Marchenko and Johnny Gaudreau. Second line of Boone Jenner, Kent Johnson, and Jack Roslovic. Capitals going Ovechkin, Sherry Strome, Kuznetsov, Wilson, Oshie, Backstrom, Smith, Milano. Whole bunch of ownership here on the Capitals top line. I guess it's warranted. Like, Blue Jackets are just bad. Laine at center is bad. Like, maybe he ends up being okay center. I just can't imagine him being awful defensive winger magically turning into a good defensive center. Like, I just can't see it. I just never like stacking the Capitals here. Their top power play unit is across 3 even strength lines. I guess if anything, you full stack the top line because Sheary is on the second unit and Ovechkin just plays both units. But like, I just don't know if I want to full stack a Capitals line at that ownership. I guess there's ways to get different. I'm just not. With all the big totals on this slate, this is one of the teams I'm not super enthusiastic about stacking.
Yeah. One thing about Washington is that they do like to change up their lines quite a bit. I'm kind of surprised like people aren't a little bit more excited about playing Columbus. Like, this is a Washington team that has given up at least 4 goals in 4 straight games.
I like Columbus.
Yeah, and you know, they're still, you know, Trevor Van Riemsdyk is out tonight. You know, they lost a bunch of defensemen, obviously, either through trade or through injury. John Carlson's still not back. It's basically their entire blue line missing, except for Martin Fairbairn. So, like, there are a lot of guys missing from this lineup. And we're talking about the defensive numbers for Tom Wilson and Alex Ovechkin.
They're so bad.
I would say what defensive numbers, because they really don't exist. Honestly, if you put Wilson and Ovechkin's defensive metrics on the Anaheim Ducks, they would not look out of place. And I mean that sincerely. They've been absolutely atrocious defensively. The problem is, you know, they don't get all the top line shutdown matching. Like, you will see some of the depth lines from Washington get some top line matching. So that kind of hurts the Columbus top line. And I know what you mean. Like, it is really hard to see Patrick Laine being a good defensive center, they went into Vegas and outplayed Vegas. Like, I know Columbus got their brains beat in, like, 7-2 or whatever it was, but the Laine line itself played pretty well. They're only 17 and change, all three on the top power play unit. You know, the Washington penalty kill is not very good. They're just riding a hot save percentage right now. I don't mind Columbus won a little bit here. It's just one of those, like, it feels like one of those, you know, 3 weeks left in the season lines that's going to go absolutely nuclear at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it feels like week 18 of NFL trying to be like, oh, am I going to play Minshew at quarterback?
Yeah, exactly. And with, you know, especially with the Washington blue line so beat up, like, it's not as if this Washington team is a stout defensive team or something like that, right? Since the trade deadline, the only teams giving up more shots at 5-on-5 are Arizona, this Columbus team, Montreal, and Anaheim. And then it's Washington. This team sucks. I don't mind Columbus one here. On the Washington side, I mean, you can't go wrong with Ovechkin, right? Just play Ovechkin. Like, it's pretty simple. Just put Ovechkin in your lineup. Like, if you're worried about line changing or, you know, broken correlation and stuff like that, you know, you'll probably get Stroman Ovechkin on the top power play unit. Who knows how long that will last. So you can do a Stroman Ovechkin. But I'm with you. Like, I'm not super excited about stacking, especially the depth from Washington. Like, if I'm playing Washington, it's Stroman Ovechkin or probably nothing.
Yeah. I mean, like, even when they're good, they're hard to stack. Now this, you know, Ovechkin one-off is fine, but if he's going to come in around 20%, like, probably should take someone along for the ride with you. Like Sandin, at least, maybe, or something. I don't know. There's ways to get different, though. Let's move on to a barn burner. Toronto Maple Leafs with a 3.1 total heading into New York. That sucks. The Islanders have a 2.9 total. Battle of Elias here. Samsonov and Sorokin are confirmed. Since the trade deadline, the Leafs' expected goals numbers have absolutely cratered, which isn't surprising when you know, get rid of your best bottom six player and have the best fourth defensive pair in the league who doesn't even play. You got Cal Yarncroft with Kerfoot and Matthews on the top line. Like, what?
I don't want to say anything because I don't want to jinx it. I really need this to all lead to, like, bounced in five games in the first round. Oh. I really need this to happen. Like, I don't ask a lot from a higher power. I really need this to happen. Like, what are they doing?
Oh, I like when they started trading for all these defensemen, I figured you're going to move a defenseman to shore up their bottom six. What is, like, I wish I was like a bug stuck in Kyle Dubas's SpongeBob socks.
You got to trade Rasmus Sandin for Erik Gustafsson because that's a big upgrade.
Yeah. And like, why did they trade Pierre Engvall? He's their best bottom six winger.
See, and like, that's okay. Like, let's actually talk about this game now. Obviously, the injury to Ryan O'Reilly is making a difference here, right?
Yeah, but he's going to come back in the bottom six now because they have to put him there.
Yeah, right. But he was there when he got injured too, right? Like, he only played his first couple games with Tavares, and then they moved him down. So I guess we have to really reserve judgment until Ryan O'Reilly comes back. But the reason why
you can reserve judgment, I'll use all my judgment.
Okay, fair enough. Hey, free country, man. But the reason why we're laughing so much about this is not only because we like to make fun of the Leafs here. It's because the Toronto bottom six has been absolute dog water for the last month. Basically, it's been basically a month now because they sat Engvall out a couple games. I think the very last game before the trade deadline. So his last game was at the end of February, like February 26th or 27th or something. So it's been about a month with Engvall out of the lineup. Their bottom six is honestly like a 35% expected goal share in that stretch. And I talked about this on Twitter. That's not normal for a contending team. Like the Dallas Stars, their bottom six is like 52% expected goal share. Even the Edmonton Oilers are at like 51% or something like that. I think another team I brought up was the Carolina Hurricanes. Boston. Boston was at like 54% or something. All these teams have not a bottom six that'll run you over, but certainly a bottom six that won't get run over. That is not what Toronto has right now. They have a bottom six that will get run over. And the reason that's important for this game here is the Islanders, not all the time, but sometimes they use that Cizikas, Clutterbuck, Matt Martin matchup as a shutdown line.
It's just a whole nother issue, but
they do it. That's all we need right now. They're not going to be hard matched against Matthews or anything like that, but they'll probably take, you know, maybe like a third of the Matthews shifts or you know, 40% of the Matthews shifts or something like that. And those shifts push the New York Islanders top line into bottom six matchups, which is why it's important to talk about Toronto's bottom six and the line matching here, is because that Islanders top line, of Horvat, Lee, and Simon Holmstrom are going to get some Toronto bottom six matchups here. And the Toronto bottom six isn't even NHL caliber. Like, I'm sorry, they're not. So this is a pretty good matchup for that Islanders top line. There's no ownership coming in on them. They're 1.4% in the top stacks tool. The top line's been good with Holmstrom there. Small sample, we're talking about five games worth. 3.5 expected goals for, only 1.3 against, 63% of the shot attempt share. They're controlling, really dominating the play with Holmstrom on the top line. Now, Holmstrom won't play much. Lee and Horvat will. So Lee and Horvat are obviously the two guys to focus on. But I think they could somehow finagle their way into some decent matchups tonight, staying away from the Toronto top six. And for that reason, I don't mind Horvat, Lee, and Holmstrom here tonight. Again, this is one of those situations where I don't think I'd get to it in a single entry. If I was 20 maxing or 50 lineups or something like that tonight, they would be a line I would be heavily considering as a secondary filler. Yeah. On the Toronto side, what do we do? Playing Austin Matthews with Alex Kerfoot and Cali Yarncroc? Like, we talked about this. We talked about this in our Discord. The offensive numbers with Kerfoot and Matthews are abysmal. Like, below league average. Think of that. Think of that. Austin Matthews, his line with Alex Kerfoot. Austin Matthews, the guy that almost scored 70 goals last year, is below league average. This is what they're running out. Now, they're shooting like 16% or something like that at 5-on-5, which is way too high, but it's why they've still been able to score goals. Honestly, man, out on Toronto 1, Toronto 2, I think, is playable because I don't think the second line matchup against Islanders 2 is really that bad. So I think Tavares, Marner, and Bunting is somewhat playable. Like, I don't think you have to play Austin Matthews in a Toronto stack here tonight. I really don't. Not with the line mates he's being given. And this isn't a spot where you focus on the power play guys. So it's not like you'd be adding Austin Matthews to Tavares and Marner to make it a power play stack against the Islanders on the road. So I think Toronto 2's fine here, especially with the positive leverage on the top stacks tool. And, you know, they have been generating a lot of offense. 3.1 expected goals with Bunting there. 3.5 actual goals per 60 minutes. Those are good offensive numbers. Facing Sorokin sucks, but I don't think it's a bad matchup. I just, you know, I think Toronto 2 is my favorite line, but I really don't have much interest in anything on the Toronto side. And I think Islanders 1 is the only thing I really have interest in this game.
Yeah, I agree. I can't wait till Austin Matthews wins a cup in Mullet Arena. It's going to be great. Let's move on to the next one. Got this. This has Revenge Street written all over this one. Detroit Red Wings with a 3 total. Heading into St. Louis, the Blues have a 3.5 total. Magnus Hellberg, Joel Hofer are confirmed. Got a couple. If you live on the... what is it? I forget what street.
Narrative Street.
There we go. I just... my brain melted after I had to talk about Kerfoot on the top line. Jake Walman back in St. Louis. Jakub Vrana playing Detroit for the first time since getting traded. Vrana on a line with Thomas and Kyrou. Buchnevich centering Torpachenko and Kasperi Kapanen. It's just funny to say because Torpachenko was on the fourth line to start the season. Kasperi Kapanen was in Pittsburgh. I do like that Blues top line here for multiple reasons. One, Lucas Raymond on the top line for the Wings. We've talked about it. Garbage. Pia Suter on the top line. Garbage. If they get depth matchups, Andrew Kopp, garbage. There's just not a lot of ownership here. The Blues power play units leave a lot to be desired. Like, I don't like the split units, but like the top line, you get Vrana and Kyrou on one unit, you get Thomas on the other. They're fully correlated. This might be one of my favorite lines here because the Wings penalty kill is also pretty bad. But I think Thomas, Vrana, Kyrou is my favorite line in this game.
Yeah, I'm just going to touch on Detroit real quick. I don't really have a lot of interest in Detroit. Like you said, we talk about Lucas Raymond all the time here. His giveaway last night was
so bad.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah.
They haven't really been generating a whole lot, Kel Caprice, since the trade deadline. 2.5 expected goals for, which is bang on league average. Like, Detroit 1 is a league average line, I think, at best offensively. They're coming in bang on with their top two stack percentage. Like, I don't see any outstanding reason to play the Detroit top line here tonight on a road back-to-back where there's, you know, they're not even getting good leverage. Like, they're going to be maybe even slightly over-owned here tonight. So, you know, they're fine because of the matchup. Like, the St. Louis matchup isn't a big problem. What is the problem is that St. Louis doesn't take many penalties. 2.5 times shorthanded per game. It's the second fewest in the league. And I think that's a number that's been going down over the last few weeks. So, you know, Detroit's power play is probably not going to get much chance to shine. So they have to get there at 5-on-5. The 5-on-5 numbers aren't good. Like, I just think there's other spots in that price range I'd rather go play. So I'm pretty much out on Detroit. Like, I would rather just pay up the extra $900 and go play Islanders, the Islanders top line we just talked about. Like, seriously. So it's what to do with St. Louis, and I agree with you. It's the Thomas Kyrou line. Now, there's no sample with Vrana there. Buchnevich, Thomas and Kyrou have been pretty bad defensively since the trade deadline. They're at 4.9 expected goals against, which, like, again, that's something that would fit in on Anaheim. So maybe I should have some more interest in Detroit. But the thing is that they're still generating not quite a bit offensively, but they're still over 3 goals per 60 minutes of 5-on-5. You know, neither the first nor second line matchup against Detroit is a particularly difficult one. The Detroit penalty kill, not really something to fear either. It is St. Louis. It is the St. Louis top line I like in this game, and I'm with you. Like, I look at that ownership coming in between 3-4%. That's pretty tantalizing to me against a Detroit team that is seemingly getting their brains beat in almost every single night.
Yeah. It's a 3.5 total, too. Like, there's a lot of big totals on this slate, but, like, realistically, what's the difference between a 3.9 and 3.5? Like, well, you can't score half a goal.
Well, this next game.
No, it's like 10%, right? So, like if St. Louis had a 3.9 here and they were coming in around 8-9% compared to Washington at 3.9 at 15%, I still think they're a better play than Washington. Yeah. That's my point. Like, I know you can't score half goals. I know how totals work. I was just trying to create a little bit of humor here. You can get 50% off any sport, platinum, weekly or monthly by clicking the link in the description below. If you click the link in the description below, it helps us out. If you go through the site, you can use promo code SCORE. It gives you access to everything Stochastic has to offer, including ownership, lineup generator, lineup builder, boom bust, leverage scores, and our industry-leading projections. This is for first-time users only. Now, if you click the link in the description, baseball season is coming up. You can get 50% off platinum, weekly, monthly for that. If you want to do monthly for NHL, it'll take you through the end of the regular season. So there's that. Platinum gives you every sport. If you want to test drive MLB, get 50% off that. So, you know, this is a really, really good deal. It's a limited time offer, first time users only, but click that link in the description below and you can get 50% off any sport, platinum, weekly, or monthly. Arizona Coyotes with a 2.5 total heading into Winnipeg. The Jets have a 3.9 total, another one of these 3.9 totals. No goalie confirmed for the Coyotes. It could be one of three guys. Connor Hellebuck is confirmed here. We have ourselves a flowchart situation. Flowchart says if Winnipeg is in a good matchup with ownership, it is a big old fade. Now I'm seeing some decent ownership here on the Jets here. It is a 3.9. It is a very, very good, very, very good matchup, but there's like a couple, there's a couple things going against Winnipeg here. Nikolaj Ehlers is on the top line, which is nice, but his ice time hasn't been great.
I guess it depends what you call the top line. Yeah. Connor Scheifele, Niederreiter's the top line, I think. That's what they had this morning at Morning Skate.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Connor Scheifele, Niederreiter. Yeah. Okay. Either, that being said, Ehlers in the top six, getting decent minutes, not great. He's expensive, 6K. Two, Kyle Connor, over 7,000. His production has been pretty, pretty bad recently. It's kind of like Scheifele, Connor, Niederreiter is kind of a weird line because Niederreiter and Connor are very similar players to a certain extent. I get it if you want to play the Jets here. This is a very good power play matchup. The Coyotes take a ton of penalties. I'm just not super excited about it.
Yeah, I am not all that excited either. Especially where these line combinations haven't been playing that well. Scheifele, Niederreiter, and Connor are up nearly 90 minutes together. They're at 2.4 expected goals, 2.6 actual goals per 60 minutes. That's like they're like league average. The second line, Wheeler and Ehlers playing together, 2.7 expected goals for, 2.9 actual goals for, like a little bit above league average. Neither of them that good, really. Now, not massive samples with either of the top lines, but that they haven't been playing well is concerning because it seems like the whole team hasn't been playing well for quite a while now. And, you know, Josh Morrissey still seems like he's kind of hurt. And that's really the only guy that can reliably move the puck for them, which is a bit of a concern. And like these Winnipeg players, it's a 3.9 total, which is tied for the second highest on the slate. And there's not a single, I don't think they have a single player over 6,500 on DraftKings. Kyle Connor 7,200. Everybody else is under 6,500. So you can make a stack for fairly cheap. If anything, it would be Scheifele, Niederreiter, Connor. Like all three guys are on the top power play unit. Arizona takes a ton of penalties. I think they're the most penalized team in the league right now. So it would be Winnipeg one. I do think there are reasons not to play them. Like you're talking about Kyle Connor, like his production has gone down. A lot of it is shooting percentage, but even still, what is it? 5 goals over his last 25 games. Even if you double his shooting percentage, that still only works out to like a 33 goal season. That's really not elite or anything like that. So I think it's the Winnipeg top line, but I'm with you. I'm not that stoked. Are we going back to Arizona here? There's no ownership coming in on them, coming in under 1% own, 3% top two stack probability by our top stacks tool. They've been playing legitimately well for a long time now. Like, this is just a good offensive line. This isn't, you know, last year the line was riding like a 17% shooting for like a month, which is why they had, you know, a lot of great offensive success. This line shooting percentage a little high, but they're still generating a lot, which is really important. Clayton Keller has 34 points in his last 20 games. That's patently absurd. Winnipeg doesn't take a lot of penalties. Arizona top line is not coming in with much ownership. again, it's one of those spots where I think if I was playing more lineups, I'd have more interest in Arizona 1. Single entry, I don't think I'd get there. It's Winnipeg 1 I like best in this game. Just not sure how much I actually like them.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And I agree with you on Arizona 1. If I was playing, the more lineups I was making, the more I get to Arizona here. Like, they have a 30-point projection, which they're going into Winnipeg, which should be a tough matchup. 30-point projection, no ownership. I'm not going to get to them in my one lineup because they're kind of expensive and I want to do some other things. But, like, if I'm 20-maxing, even one lineup, you're way over the field. And the more lineups you make, I think you can mix in Arizona for sure.
Yep.
Seattle Kraken with a 2.9 total. Heading into Dallas, the Stars have a 3.5 total. Joey Decord, min-priced on DraftKings, is confirmed. Here we go with another min-priced guy. Jake Ottinger also confirmed here. Here we go. If you're not going to... Between Buffalo and Dallas, they're the only two lines with a 40-point DraftKings projection. They're fully correlated. They're getting Seattle. Like, Seattle, decent defensively. Goalies have been the issue. Penalty kill, goalies have been the issue. Now they're turning to Joey Decord. Like, okay, like, maybe Joey Decord's fine, but he couldn't beat Martin Jones or Philip Grubauer out for a spot this year. So, I don't know. I think Dallas 1's in a very, very good spot here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the thing with Dallas 1 is just the same concerns that we have with Boston in its ice time, right? 17.5 to 18.5 minutes of late. That's better than what they had been, because there was a time where these guys were skating 16 to 17 minutes and not flirting with 18 minutes. So at least they're playing a little bit more. I think that it probably has to do with the Tyler Seguin injury. And Seguin's out again tonight, so... You know, maybe we can rely on them to play 18 minutes here, which is important because there's a pretty big difference between playing 15 to 16 and, you know, around 18. And the Dallas top line's been really good this month. Not just because they're scoring, which they are, but 4.1 expected goals for per 60 minutes. They're generating a lot too. Even Joe Pavelski, we slagged him for a little while. Even he's come alive of late. 14 shots in his last five games with 6 points in that stretch. So I really do like the Dallas top line here. They're going to be going up against probably that McCann line. The McCann line is – they're not bad defensively, but they're only around league average. That's not – it's not something to be feared or anything like that. And certainly the goaltending for Seattle hasn't been all that great. Seattle's penalty kill has been better lately, but generally the season has not been very good. So I'm with you. I kind of do like the Dallas top line here tonight. Coming in double-digit ownership, which is one of the concerns I do have, because, yes, they are one of the best lines on the slate. Their top two stack percentage is number two on the slate. All that makes sense. But, you know... The Boston top line is coming in with less ownership. The Buffalo top line is coming in with a fraction of the ownership. The Tampa top line is coming in with a third of the ownership. That's just kind of the problem here, right? Is like there are other spots. Like the Tampa top line is playing Montreal and they're coming in with a third of the ownership of this Dallas top line. You know what I mean? Like I think there are reasons to not play Dallas, even though it is a pretty good matchup and a pretty good price on them here tonight. The Dallas second line is also a little bit of interest to me. Ben Johnston to Donoff. Now, they're coming in with a fair bit of ownership as well. But they're going to get the middle six matchups, and those matchups really aren't that bad. Like, even the Gord Tolvanen line, their offensive numbers are still pretty good, but their defensive numbers have really fallen off over the last few weeks. That's a matchup Dallas 2 could run into quite a bit. So I honestly don't even mind the Dallas second line here. I have no interest in Seattle.
Yeah, Wyatt Johnson's been playing great recently. He's only like – he looks like a middle schooler, but he's 19 years old. He's been playing great. So, yeah, I do like the Dallas second line. Calgary Flames with a 3.8 total. Heading into Anaheim, the Ducks have a 2.7 total. Flames got absolutely ran over by the Kings last night.
Oh, did they ever.
Woo!
Man, just real quick. You don't see that, like, this Calgary Flames team has lost, you know, their fair share of games this year, whatever. a lot of those games is because Markstrom's just sucked or Vladar's just sucked or whatever. Calgary got demolished last night, not just because they gave up 8 goals. They got outshot like, what, it was like 41-21 or something like that. Like, 18. I mean, just barrel rolled by Los Angeles last night. That's not something you see a lot from this Flames team.
Yeah, Flames had 18 shots on goal last night. And it's probably going to be Danville Dash and net. John Gibson is confirmed here. Who knows what they're going to do with their lines? 3.8
on which side, though? Because Anaheim just announced that Nestoranko rookie is going to be in the lineup tonight on the third line in Frank Vetrano's spot. So now, as presumably, Frank Vetrano moves to the top six. The top six got blown up in their last game.
Right. I'm hoping that Vetrano either takes Brock McGinn's spot or Max Jones's spot.
I'm thinking it's McGinn's spot. Man, they put Max Jones on the power play last game. You think he's getting booted out of the top six? That guy's there for life, man. I think it's Brock McGinn will probably get moved to the bottom six, and Vetrano goes to the top line with Stroman and Zegras. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, ostensibly, like the Ducks are awful. Like, I would stack my dogs against the Ducks. I just don't know what these line combinations are going to be. Huberdeau has been a bag of trash for, like, 3 months, like all season, but like really, really bad the last month and a half here. I get like Backlund, Coleman, if they're together, maybe, but like they got dump trucked last night. They probably have to have a ridiculous end to the season to even sniff the playoffs. No ownership on the Ducks. I wish I had line combinations because I kind of like the Ducks here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can probably rely on that Terry Jones line staying together, I think. And at the minimum, I think Zegras and Strome stay together. Like, there are probably pairs you can play and kind of rely on. Like, I think you can play, Zegras and Strome. I think you can play Terry and McTavish. I would worry about playing 3-man forward combinations from Anaheim for that reason. I don't have a lot of interest in Anaheim. Like, I just don't. It's a pretty bad matchup, even with a road back-to-back for Calgary. If you want to play one-offs, like I do think like a one-off rank for Toronto, like trying to gamble with him moving into the top six, I think would make a lot of sense. If the Toronto can't go, he's expensive at 5,400. So there are other guys, in that late slate range that you can play instead. Like, we'll talk about Kuzmenko next, Brock Besser. Like, there are guys you can swap to. So, don't mind Vetrano. There's just nothing I have interest in stacking. The Calgary side, I do have interest in that Calgary top line. Lindholm, Toffoli, and Mangiapane. Now, yeah, the broken power plays and all that, it's whatever. Calgary's going to Calgary. What's important here is that top is Mangiapane and Tyler Toffoli, whenever they played together this year, have been pretty good at generating shot quality, which is something a lot of Flames lines have really struggled with this season. It's really reminiscent of those 2014 Los Angeles Kings teams that Sutter coached, where they would generate a lot of shots, but not a lot of quality. It's the same thing with this Flames team, except Toffoli and Mangiapane are pretty good at it whenever they do get ice time together. 3.6 expected goals per 60 minutes at 5-on-5 with Mangiapane and Toffoli on the ice. So Mangiapane, Toffoli, and Lindholm, I kind of like that combination. Now, they're coming in over-owned, but every Calgary combination is going to be over-owned because of the matchup. It's just figuring out which one you want to play. It's the Toffoli line. Like I said, Toffoli and Mangiapane have been playing pretty well together. Mangiapane over 2 shots per game in his last 5 games, which is a nice little take up. You still get 2 of the 3 guys on the top power play unit. It's Calgary one I like best in this game.
Yeah. Assuming they're together, I do really like them as well. It's just after getting unloaded on by the Kings, like you just don't know if the Muppets going to just, completely, have like Trevor Lewis with, Tyler Toffoli and Dylan Dubé. Like, you just don't know what he's going to do. But assuming they're together, I do like them. Let's get to the last game of the night here. Vegas Golden Knights with a 3.4 total. heading into Vancouver. The Canucks have a 3.1 total. John Quick is probable. Thatcher Demko is confirmed. 7K Thatcher Demko, I may add. Canucks yeeted Andre Kuzmenko off the top power play unit for Brock Besser. He didn't come back. Kuzmenko played the first power play there, and then they moved Besser into his spot and stayed there the rest of the game. That being said, Vegas, with all their injuries, is not very good defensively. Johnny Quick, if it is him, you know, at this point in his career, he had the I'm on a new team, I'm going to be good thing. And now it's kind of like, oh, crap, I'm still, you know, 400-year-old Johnny Quick. I kind of like Vancouver 1 here. They're coming in with 1-2% ownership, even if that doubles. I have interest in Vancouver here. On the Vegas side, I don't know. Like, they just haven't been great. If anything, it would be that top line. But, like, I don't know. Demko's looked good since he's gotten back. Pettersson, Bevilier, Kuzmenko have actually been decent defensively. So, like, I don't know how much interest I have in the Knights here.
So, I think part of this game is figuring out what the line matching is going to be. And Vancouver, you know, had been using that JT Miller line kind of as a shutdown line at home. Presumably, that means JT Miller out against the Vegas top line, which kind of sucks because that means Pedersen's probably going to go into that, you know, that Carlson Smith or Fave line, which has actually been pretty good defensively. It's the Vegas top line that hasn't been good defensively. You want that matchup, and Pedersen's not going to get that at 5-on-5. The Golden Knights are also the least penalized team in the NHL. Nobody takes fewer penalties than Vegas, and Vancouver is a heavily power play reliant team. I think this is a matchup where I don't really want to play Vancouver. And it's weird because there are a lot of matchups where I actually do want to play Vancouver, and I have been playing them quite a bit over the last, you know, month to 6 weeks. And even Vegas's defensive numbers have been on a slide. I just think specifically the 5-on-5 matchup and, you know, the expectation of very few power plays is what's keeping me away from Vancouver's top line here. So I honestly don't even have interest in Vancouver at all here tonight. I have more interest in the Vegas side, particularly the Vegas top line. It's Barbashev, Marchessault, Eichel that I'm interested in. They're going to get that JT Miller line. The JT Miller line, 3.4 expected goals against in almost 100 minutes together, 3.4 expected goals against for 60 in almost 100 minutes together. It's a pretty good matchup for Vegas 1. Vegas 1's my favorite line in this game. But I honestly think Thatcher Demko is my favorite player in the game as a whole.
Yeah, me as well. This is a late night hammer that I don't see myself hammering. That's 13 games. We should touch on some defensemen and goalies here. 26 teams, lots of gremlins living behind the blue line. Who are you liking?
Yeah. It's a weird slate. Like, there aren't a lot of expensive defensemen I want to play.
Yeah, there aren't.
Like, because Yossi's out, Carlson's out, Makar's not on the slate. So that takes a lot of top-end defensemen out of the equation. You look at it, you got Dougie Hamilton against Minnesota. You got Rasmus Dahlin's okay against Nashville. I'm just kind of worried Dahlin's a little bit hurt. Same thing with Josh Morrissey. Alex Pietrangelo, Jacob Chychrun, like, there's just not a lot for expensive defensemen I really like. I think Brandon Montour and Shea Theodore are really the only guys over 6K on DraftKings that I have much interest in. Going down in that mid-price range, I think Hampus Lindholm, Mikhail Sergachev, Mackenzie Weegar are amongst my favorites here tonight. Weegar running that second power play unit for Calgary. It's not Noah Hanifin. It gives Weegar some extra fantasy upside. Justin Falk from St. Louis. Jake Sanderson, I know he's been flip-flop on the top power play, but he's just been playing a lot of minutes and blocking a lot of shots. I think he's fine as a little bit of a differentiator going into Boston. For super cheap guys, there are a number of guys under 3K that I like here tonight. Patrick Nemeth for Arizona is probably going to play over 20 minutes. Zach Whitecloud around 18 minutes in a pretty good matchup. Connor Clifton in a pretty good matchup at home with Boston. Jamie Oleksiak, we always play the big rig around here. If you want to pay up a little bit, I like Owen Power as well in his home matchup. Brett Pesce, $3,400 on DraftKings. I think that's a pretty good price for him, even on the road. And then Martin Fairbairn, with all of Washington's injuries, like if you want to play Sandin for the top power play, I certainly get that. I just think with all of the Washington injuries, Fairbairn and Sandin are probably going to have to play a lot of minutes here tonight.
Yeah, you named everyone that I was going to add on if you didn't, except for one. Jani Hakanpaa, the Finnish Jake Harry at $2,600 for Dallas on the top pair, I think is a good
play. He scored over the weekend too. I think on Sunday. I'm so mad I missed that.
It's always the Sunday slate where the good stuff happens, or the bad stuff. Mostly bad stuff. A lot of cheap goalies tonight on DraftKings. Who you liking?
Yeah, play the goalie that you're most comfortable playing. I don't see a reason to pay up over $8,000 for a goalie here tonight. Gustafson, Minnesota on the road, I think certainly makes a lot of sense. Igor at home with the Rangers, I think also makes a lot of sense. We just talked about Thatcher Demko at home to Vegas and John Gibson at home to Calgary. Like there are some home goalies here tonight that could see a lot of volume and they're not priced very high. So I think that's the direction I'm going here tonight. Gustafson, Gibson, Igor, or Demko, one of those four.
Yeah, Demko, 7K. John Gibson, 7,100. Then you have Elias Sorokin at 7,200. You have Igor Shesterkin, 7,300. You have a min-price guy in Seattle.
Gustafson, 7,300.
Yeah, Gustafson's 7,300. Carter Hart is 7,200. Like, yeah, if you're even Dikembe Mutombo, 6,900, I don't think you need to go there, but he's under 7K. I think if you're spending up, it's going to be Linus Ullmark, but like, I don't think there's a need to spend up, and Ullmark would have to get a shutout to pay off his price at 8,500. So, yeah, I'm going cheap tonight as well. Who are you looking for your hat trick pick?
It got spoiled in the YouTube chat a little bit earlier. Seemed kind of obvious, but I'm going with a guy that I've been rooting because of his off ice issues, and I've been high on him just as a player for a very long time. Jakub Vrána.
Very good. That was gonna be my pick if it wasn't yours. So I'm gonna go Andrew Mangiapane.
Oh, I like that. All right, Vrána, Mangiapane, couple high scoring wingers, potentially high scoring wingers,
potentially. So we will be back on Thursday. Thanks for sticking around with us for an hour and 15 minutes. Coming up at 4 on the Odd Shopper channel, The Odd Shop with Lofi and Ben. They'll go through today's best bets using the Odd Shopper premium tool. So good luck, everybody, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Good luck.